Beth Wenger, it's my good pleasure to welcome you to this program.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
How, and I guess there's different definitions to anti-Semitism, but how do you define what anti-Semitism is?
So you are absolutely correct that there are different definitions. Most people, there are three working definitions that are currently in play. One is called the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, IHRA. One's called the Jerusalem Declaration on Anti-Semitism, and the other is called the Nexus Document. They all struggle to come to terms in some ways with how anti-Semitism operates. For me, I'm not going to pick one of the three, although I do have my favorites, I'll tell you the truth. But the differences among the three have to do with largely, there are slight differences, the emphasis they place on Israel in this. I mean, anti-Semitism is you know, animus, hatred towards Jews as a people, as a religion, as an ethnic group. And that's part of the trickiness, by the way, of talking about anti-Semitism, is that Jews overlap categories that many people are used to dealing with. So Jews can be an ethnic group, they can be a religious group, and they can be both at the same time. So if you were to generalize, to me, you know, hatred towards Jews, I would say both in terms of speech and directed towards, I would say Jews as individuals or Jews as a group, towards Jews as a community. I think that's the best definition, as difficult as it is.
My interest is piqued where you say the difference between these three different definitions that are out there. And I guess it's sort of one of those things, you know it when you see it, maybe. But if you disagree with anything that I say in the course of our conversation, of course, but what you said, what one of the things that really does differentiate each of these definitions is the issue of Israel. Can you talk to me more about that?
So, yeah. And then I do want to return to anti-Semitism as an idea. I don't want to get only clouded by Israel, but
if you want to start there first, go ahead.
No, I'll answer your question. So the notion of whether criticism of Zionism or Israel in and of itself constitutes anti-Semitism. And I'll lay my cards on the table. I don't think that it does, but there are those who disagree. Now, I would say also, like most definitions, it depends. If that criticism of Zionism or Israel comes with notions of conspiracy among Jews or notions of Jews as an undifferentiated group, or certainly symbols of Jewishness that are canards of anti-Semitism, traditional anti-Semitism, Nazi symbols, other sorts of symbols, then when that criticism is mixed with those, to me, yes, it's anti-Semitism. And by the way, don't think it's easy to say yes or no. These lines are anything but clear, and they're anything but clear today, meaning today in October of 2023 as we're speaking. But there are those who feel that criticizing the movement of Zionism or criticizing Israel as a state is tantamount to anti-Semitism. I don't agree with that, but I, as I said, I understand those who do.
What's their reasoning for equating?
Well, so they aren't all an undifferentiated group, so I don't want to do that either. But so, for example, if you look at the IHRA, that was the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance definition, so they will, that statement identifies, for example, accusing the Jews as a people or Israel as a state of inventing or exaggerating the Holocaust, accusing Jews of being more loyal to Israel or to Jewish interests than to their own nations, claiming the existence of the state of Israel as a racist endeavor. So I've just given you three examples in the IHRA definition that focus on Israel. So I'd rather talk about specifics than talk about a they out there, because there aren't undifferentiated groups, and people's views on this are complicated, and I want to respect that by not lumping it all in and being more specific. If you read, I'll just mention that I'm not going to go through definitions ad nauseum, I promise to anyone who's listening, but the Jerusalem Declaration was a response in part to the IHRA definition. And the Jerusalem Declaration said, listen, of the examples given about anti-Semitism, many of them focus on the state of Israel. And the Jerusalem Declaration said, you know, we feel that this is undue emphasis on one arena. We don't share the same political views, and that there were, its definitions were really, you know, anti-Semitism is discrimination, prejudice, hostility, or violence against Jews as Jews or Jewish institutions defined as Jewish. So you see the nuance here, which is what I'm trying to get at, especially at this moment when we're talking on whatever it is, October 30th of 2023, a few weeks after a terrible terrorist attack. It's tough to talk with nuance. And I'm trying to do that with regard to anti-Semitism and to seeing the different perspectives that exist about it.
It's a supercharged moment.
It is a supercharged moment. But look, so I wanna, it's a horrific moment, right? It's a horrific moment on every level. It was a horrible terrorist attack by Hamas on innocent Israeli civilians, and now it's going to be a lot of innocent Palestinians who are cut off from resources and killed, and that is where we are. But not trying to pivot away from something that's quite important, and I'm happy to come back to the discussion of anti-Semitism has been around for a long, 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 long time and has had twists and turns in American life and in European nations and in the Middle East and in many other places for centuries and centuries. And it isn't new to this moment. And that also deserves a kind of long thought if our discussion is about anti-Semitism.
I'm interested in that thought.
Well, so without turning this into a classroom lecture.
It's of course, okay if you do.
So the anti-Judaism and a hostility between Christians and Jews obviously started in the ancient period, right? That's a long history. There's also a history of cooperation there. There's also a history of cooperation between Jews and Muslims and a history of conflict. So I'm a modern Jewish historian, personally. And in the modern period, although this can be overdrawn and there are exceptions to it, is when anti-Semitism, first of all, that's when the term is invented. The term is invented in the 1890s in Germany. And
who invents it?
Someone named Wilhelm Marr, who was a leading anti-Semite, if we want to lead.
So an anti-Semite created the word anti-Semitism.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
So look, what makes modern anti-Semitism quite distinct is it comes in the wake of some European nations beginning to debate Jewish rights and citizenship. And it's essentially a backlash against that. So the notion, I'm being simplistic, but this is what I'll say. What was new about anti-Semitism that wasn't in anti-Judaism? One thing that was new was the nation state coming about and the notion of who was in and who was out and whether Jews could be insiders, whether they belonged in the nation state with rights as others had. And there was a fierce debate over that. The whole spirit of nationalism, aside from citizenship, and the notion that maybe Jews could not quite, because they were Jews and always hoped, in theory, for a return to Zion, couldn't be trusted as citizens. There's also the new politicized notion about Jews and whether they belong. And there is a new aspect of the rising racial science of the 19th century that began to define Jews as racially other. So there's a notion that Jews are culturally other and a notion that they are racially other, not always shared by the same anti-Semitic thinkers, like some thought one, something. So very famously, Wagner thought Jews could not write German music culturally because they couldn't. In the United States, it took a long time for Jews to be faculty members in English departments because how could they know English literature? So this lasts a long time. And in many ways, so a lot of modern historians will say that it's a post-emancipation phenomenon. In other words, Jews had to be emancipated, not everywhere, but in many places. And so the notion is we gave Jews all these rights and now they're taking over. This is also a whole, this is where some of this conspiracy theory comes from.
The banking,
but also culturally. So when this bubbles up really in Western and Central Europe, in the German states and also in places like Austria, it wasn't just the Rothschild banking myth, although that was always a big piece of it. Rothschild is everywhere in anti-Semitic imagery, for example. But it's also the notion that Jews are taking over the press, too much in newspapers, and the Jews start wars for their own interests. This conspiratorial thinking that really does begin in the late 19th century and the 1880s and 90s. And then it's the most famous document is the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, right? Which many people know. It's a forged document around 1902. That has the supposed meeting of a bunch of Jewish leaders getting together talking about how they'll start wars and how they'll take over financing and they'll do it all for their own gain and they'll take over the world. This meeting never happened. I just want to say that out loud since it's being recorded. But this document had a really, really long life. It was circulated at the beginning of the 20th century. Henry Ford, also a pretty serious anti-Semite, had it published in newspapers that he sponsored in the United States called the Dearborn Independent. and then also translated into many languages into a multi-volume work called The International Jew. And by the way, the Protocols of the Elders of Zion had another airing after 9/11. The notion, Jews were behind 9/11. And even, not the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, as far as I know, but even more recently in COVID, there was this notion that Jews were either behind the generating the disease, or they were behind the government's shutdowns. So the conspiratorial ideas about Jews are a very key part of anti-Semitism, as is racial thinking. And again, these have a very, very long life.
I read one of your interviews, and something that really piqued my interest is that, as you mentioned, the stereotype over, and not just the stereotype, but also the conspiracy theory of controlling all the financial levers in the world is some, and maybe this was another conspiracy theory, but some of our early 20th century leftist radicals were Jews. I mean, I think of Emma Goldman. Yeah. Just off the top of my head.
Oh, yeah. And Jews in the labor movement and the socialist movement. So this is the thing. Anti-Semitism has no logical consistency. Jews are accused of being, because Jews, by the way, were disproportionately represented in leftist movements. I can explain historically why. But, and in socialism, even many were communists. And so Jews are accused of being socialist and Bolsheviks, even while being accused of being capitalist qua capitalists. It's not a logical way of thinking. Although they do have, if you think about it, they're both about certain, again, control, overturning and dominating certain systems, political, economic. So there's a thread that binds them. I've said in the past that I thought anti-Semitism was we can't get rid of it. Sometimes we can't get rid of language, even though it's imprecise. I'm not fond of the term because it's thrown around. He's an anti-Semite. This was anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism is an umbrella term for a whole lot of different kinds of thought. And that comes from the right, that comes from the left, that has all kinds of thinking about Jews under it. I almost think it would be better as a plural than a singular, if at all. But here we are, we have this word, but it doesn't have a singular manifestation. We started with definitions. Okay, it has a definition, hatred of Jews, but it comes from so many different directions and for different reasons.
I hope this doesn't get us too off topic, but I do want to follow up on what you just said about Jews and the left. Mm-hmm. What is that history? Why do we have that dynamic?
Jews are associated both with liberalism, meaning democratic liberalism, for reasons you could understand. What gave them citizenship and rights in most places? Liberalism.
Mm-hmm. I think of the French exactly. Rights of man.
Rights of man. So that's one of the places where you have a key recorded debate about Jewish emancipation. Right on the heels of the rights of man, which by all accounts should have emancipated Jews and lots of other groups. But no, there was a debate about it. So yes, but there's a reason. Liberal governments are generally the ones that promise Jews rights and belonging, even if that promise is not always fulfilled. So that's the liberal answer, which you didn't ask. And the left answer, which you did ask, comes from different places. I think one of the places it comes from first is Eastern Europe, where Jews are very much, not exclusively, but involved with socialism. Socialism is a way of obtaining rights for Jews alongside universal rights for all, and especially all workers. It's another path to that. And on the left, in many places throughout, I mean, I mentioned Eastern Europe, but throughout Western Europe, and even in the United States, certainly in the heyday of immigration and strikes throughout the labor industry from about the 19 teens through, and then again through in the Depression, Jews were very heavily represented in those strikes and as unionists, because it represented a path to an alternative path to gaining both rights and equality. But, and there was always some tension for Jews between the particularism of Jewishness and the universalism of socialism, but they managed that. Now, the Socialist Party didn't always like the way they managed that. They were in tension, but this is a major strain of Jewish identity that it wasn't for many Jews who were in the movement, and that was what people said, in the movement. It wasn't the way we talk about, well, this is my political affiliation. For people genuinely in the movement, it was their identity, was what they, who and what they were as Jews and as people. Now, a lot of people who went out on those strikes were not necessarily ideologically in that camp. They just wanted, you know, better wages and hours and things like that. But for those who were really committed, Jewish rights and equality could be had through universal goals.
That's interesting. I've wondered about the sort of historic connection with Jews and the left, but I never knew that was interesting. And I think that was important to sort of lay out as we go into what's, I think, happening today. There's a lot of news reports, a lot of columns criticizing the left and also reporting that there is a schism that's happening between progressives and Jews over what's happening in Gaza right now, and in Israel as well, obviously October 7th. How do you see this? How do you see?
Well, also between progressives and Jews, but also between progressive Jews and other Jews, right? It's an internal Jewish schism, and it's a schism, and I feel like it's more than two sides. So how do I feel about that? I think we need to start being able to hold more than one truth in our mind at the same time. Here I'm speaking for myself. I have no problem separating Hamas as a terrorist organization and condemning it, while also seeing the difference between Hamas and innocent Palestinian civilians. And to see the complexities there, and the fact that, you know, before this event, Gaza was hardly a place in good shape. And a lot of it had to do with a long-standing conflict between the Israeli government and the struggle for Palestinian rights. We can say this was a horrible terrorist attack. And I have no sympathy for Hamas in any way, but I also understand that put it this way, I actually wish we could talk with a little more nuance about this. I wish we could talk about the fact that, yes, Israel, I believe in Israel's right to exist. My own, in a perfect world, I'd love to see a two-state solution. I don't know how we get there from today, but, you know, we can see the rights. I'm troubled by the notion of wiping Israel off the face of the earth, and I'm troubled by the notion that Gaza just needs to be razed in order this. And I am even more troubled by the fact that we can't talk to each other about these views, which has, to me, made this tragedy even worse in many ways. Not worse for the people living it. And, you know, it's a small community. I personally have family in Israel and know the families of some who were murdered or taken hostage. This is horrible. This is 9/11 in Israel. A terrorist attack out of nowhere in a much smaller country. So, and I understand that I wish that statecraft and diplomacy could think about long-term consequences. It seems I don't hear any of it. Don't hear any of it from our leaders, certainly not from Israeli leaders, that how are we going, what's the future of this? Where is this going to get us? That's what I wish, right? We need hostages released, but raising Gaza to rubble, what's that going to accomplish except another minimally 50 years of this? Every 5 and 10-year-old innocent Palestinian, what are they going to think about Israel? So I'm saying two things that sound contradictory, which is this is a horrific event in Israel, and their needs, they have to respond. They have to get their hostages released. But what that response should be, I wish in the moment could have a long-term view and not an immediate one. And listen, think about how our country handled 9/11. We didn't do such a good job of that, having a long-term view. So I'm asking something that almost no nation state ever does when attacked. And that was an attack. So, but I'm sorry, I'm not making much sense, I don't think, at this point.
No, I think you're laying out your view on a very complicated situation. Again, a very charged situation, which people have very strong feelings for it. Do you feel, I think there are always extreme examples in all directions that someone can point to and then say, you know, a certain side is being inappropriate. But in general, do you think the pro-Palestinian left has been anti-Semitic?
That's a difficult question. Because I don't think the pro-Palestinian left is one thing. Have I heard a little there? Sometimes. But I also hear a movement that's, for a long time, been trying to get its message out. I understand the river to the sea. I understand where it came from. I understand its historical origins. I don't think the talk about wiping Israel out as a state is practical or desirable. Certainly not desirable from my perspective. But even the Israelis and Palestinians can fight and have fought for a long time about their right to that tiny piece of land. I think if we could start from both of these peoples have a right to this land, and how are we going to work that out? And of course, historically, there have been times when it seemed close. I also understand where terrorism comes from. I do, from in some cases from oppression. But I know of that as that phrase comes out of my mouth, if you were one of those Israelis who had family killed or have hostages currently there, you don't want to hear about that. Oppression just wiped out 1,400 people, and they're more than 200 in captivity, you know, in God knows what could. So, you know, part of being able to think historically is empathy. I've always felt that being, and I think even being an intelligent global citizen means being able to put yourself in someone else's shoes. And I find myself trying to do that on many sides. And that's why my rambling answer to you has been, but from this perspective, I can see this. And from that perspective, I can see that. And, you know, critics who would hear this would say, well, that's an academic sitting in an ivory tower, you know. Not really. That's actually what's happening, you know. And I don't know how you solve anything if you can't see the long histories that have brought us to this moment.
Beth Wenger has been our guest. Beth Wenger is the Moritz and Josephine Berg Professor of History at the University of Pennsylvania. She is also Associate Dean for Graduate Studies in the School of Arts and Sciences. Beth Wenger, thank you for taking this time to talk to me today.
Thank you.